rulers of the nations as you fuss and fight over who owns this or that and who has the right to design, build, sell and store and fire all the bombs and guns to defend your holy empire. There are children hungry, children sick and dying. There are mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers crying. They're only pawns in your play of power and corruption. Slowly starve them, your new weapon of mass destruction. And prove to me, America, that you care. And prove to me, America, you're aware. Who's dying for your freedom in this land? Who pays the cost for the liberties you demand?
From Pacifica Radio, this is a special national broadcast, Haiti Under Siege. I am Amy Goodman from the Democracy Now! Studios in New York.
And I'm Dennis Bernstein of Flashpoints, reporting from the studios of Pacifica Station, KPFA, in Berkeley, California.
Coming up on the program, we'll go live to the Haitian capital, Port-au-Prince, for the latest developments on the ground. We'll speak with Ira Kurzban, the general counsel for the Haitian government. Coming up on the program, we go live to the Haitian capital, Port-au-Prince, for the latest developments. Dennis.
Also, we'll look at the refugee situation, the deployment of U.S. forces, and the involvement of U.S. intelligence agencies in the coup d'etat unfolding in Haiti. But, Amy, first back to you for the latest in a roundup.
We'll also be speaking with Randall Robinson, a close personal friend of the Aristides, who's been speaking to them repeatedly throughout the past week. The Caribbean nation of Haiti is under siege. What we know at this moment is that the Bush administration has announced that President Jean-Bertrand Aristide has resigned. The country's Supreme Court Chief Justice Boniface Alexander has assumed interim power. At least 10 people have been killed today in the capital, Port-au-Prince, 100 over the last few days, and the numbers expected to rise. There are reports that death squads are hunting down Lavalas members and other supporters of Aristide. Earlier today, Haiti's Prime Minister Yvon Neptune read a statement he said was handwritten in Creole by Aristide. The statement in part reads, quote, "My resignation will avoid bloodshed, life for everyone, death for no one. I decided to respect and make people respect the Constitution. The Constitution should not drown in the blood of the Haitian people." Since the early hours of this morning, Aristide has not been seen or heard. The last public statement the Haitian president made was a statement on Haitian radio saying that he would not step down. France's RTL Radio is reporting that Aristide was taken away from his home this morning by U.S. soldiers. A man who was identified as the caretaker of Aristide's residence was quoted by RTL as saying, "The American army came to take him away at 2 in the morning. The Americans forced him out with weapons. It was American soldiers. They came with a helicopter and they took the security guards. Aristide was not happy. He did not want to be taken away. He did not want to leave. He was not able to fight against the Americans," unquote. Here in New York, the United Nations Security Council is in emergency session, discussing the deployment of a multinational force. President Bush today said that force would be led by United States Marines. They're scheduled to begin landing in Haiti tonight. Earlier today, Bush addressed reporters on the lawn at the White House.
President Aristide resigned. He has left his country. The Constitution of Haiti is working. There is an interim president, as per the Constitution, in place. I have ordered the deployment of Marines as the leading element of an interim international force to help bring order and stability to Haiti. I have done so in working with the international community government believes it essential that Haiti have a hopeful future. This is the beginning of a new chapter in the country's history. I would urge the people of Haiti to reject violence, to give this break from the past a chance to work. And the United States is prepared to help. Thank you.
George Bush addressing reporters on the lawn of the White House. In a little while, we'll be speaking with two members of the Congressional Black Caucus, Congressmembers Charles Rangel of New York and Los Angeles Congressmember Maxine Waters. But Dennis, right now, we turn to you.
Thank you, Amy. We are joined now by Ira Kurzban. He's the general counsel to the Haitian government and has been working with President Aristide for several years. Well, Ira Kurzban, you heard the President of the United States say that the Constitution is working. We have CNN, NBC, ABC, NPR, Fox reporting that he resigned and left the country for the good of the people. We now have reports that, in fact, he may have been taken out in gunpoint, and this may very well have been a kidnapping of a duly elected president by Marines and the United States government, led by a president who may not have been elected. What do you have in terms of your last discussions with President Aristide, and what can you tell us about whether he was kidnapped or left on his own power?
Well, first, let me say that there's some irony in President Bush saying this is a new beginning. It's actually quite an old story. And one of those stories began with his father, who was president at the time of the first coup against President Aristide. And, of course, Dick Cheney and a number of other people in the Defense Department and in the State Department were in the first Bush government when they had the first coup. So, in a way, this is an old story for the Bushes, and this clearly was a military coup. To the degree that there is a resignation letter, we don't know the circumstances under whether circumstances under which President Aristide signed this letter, if indeed he did sign it. We do know that there was a an attempted military coup by Guy Philippe and Jodelle Chamblain, people who were assets of the United States intelligence community, and that as they were moving closer and closer into Port-au-Prince and attempting to assassinate the president, high officials of the Bush administration were saying that they would do nothing to stop them from doing it. So this is a situation where even if one believes that President Aristide actually signed a piece of paper, it was clearly signed with a gun to his head, which is why we haven't heard from President Aristide. We haven't seen a picture of President Aristide. We haven't heard a statement made by President Aristide as to his resignation. We've seen a piece of paper, and it reminds me in many ways of the old Soviet system, you know, where somebody has signed a confession or a declaration. We have now, it is now 15 hours after President Aristide was taken out of his home by gunpoint by United States Marines. And we still don't know where he is. The State Department and the Defense Department, despite my repeated requests, has refused to have him call either me or any of the members of the president's government. I demanded as his lawyer the right to speak with him and to speak with his wife, and that has been rebuffed on some silly excuse that he's still flying somewhere 15 hours later. We must have a huge jumbo jet with an awful lot of fuel flying him around the world to keep him up in the air for the last 15 hours where he couldn't call, as if, of course, the president couldn't call on a military jet. I mean, it's inconceivable to me that there's no capacity to make a telephone call on a military jet. And all we've asked for, as the Prime Minister of the Bahamas has now asked for, as a number of other international leaders have now asked for, is simply a call from President Aristide to find out if, in fact, this was or was not a military coup, if, in fact, he left under gunpoint, as we believe he did, and if, in fact, he's still safe. We are seriously concerned about the president's physical elimination now that the Bush administration in a military coup has managed to try and politically eliminate him. We're now concerned that he will be physically eliminated. And to show you how ridiculous this is, less than 2 hours ago, the last version of the story was that he was headed Central African Republic, which seems inconceivable to me that the president would put himself in a situation where he would likely be in danger being in another. He could go to a place like South Africa or could go to a nearby country like Jamaica. So we have many questions. None of them have been answered.
That's the voice of Ira Kurzban. He is general counsel to the Haitian government. And we're talking about the potential kidnapping of a duly elected president of a country. And we are talking about Haiti. Ira Kurzban, when we spoke earlier, you talked about your inability not only to reach President Aristide, but also to reach those in charge of his security. Now, this report that Amy referred to coming out of the French radio RTL suggested that it was Aristide and his security people who were taken away at gunpoint. Talk a little bit more about your attempts to reach Aristide and what his state of mind was the last you spoke with him. Was he getting prepared to leave?
I spoke to President Aristide yesterday afternoon. There was no suggestion at all in either his voice or his or any statements he made to me that he was going to do anything but what he had said he would do repeatedly, which was to remain in Haiti and to uphold the democratic order in the country. Now, of course, last night, I believe, was, to put it in very stark terms, a squeeze play played on the president. I mean, Guy Philippe and this paramilitary organization created by the U.S. intelligence community was moving into Port-au-Prince, and the administration was saying, you know, we won't protect you. They're going to come in. They're going to kill you. They're going to kill your wife. They're going to kill thousands of your supporters. And who knows what was said in that meeting. Maybe they said to him, if you sign this document, we'll make sure the Marines come in and protect your supporters, which, by the way, they're not. And you should know that as we speak, the prime minister of Haiti's home has been burnt down. The chief spokesman of the government of Haiti's home has been burnt down. Two members of the mayor of Port-au-Prince's family have been executed. And this is going to go on and on. So we're wondering where President Bush's statement about sending in the Marines is, unless they intend to wait until all Lavalas people are executed before they do anything. But putting that aside, you know, the reality here is that the president was facing this total squeeze play by the United States in their military coup, and I don't know what decision he made. I would like to find out, and we'd certainly like to call him. You know, my sense is that either they're keeping him up in the air so that he can't respond to, you know, what Bush and the others are saying about what he did, and this claim that he fled the country and that he resigned. Obviously, if President Aristide could talk, he'd let us know what really happened. They're preventing him from speaking to the American public and to speaking to the world and to speaking to his own Haitian people. So we're concerned about that, that they prevented him from speaking. And ultimately, of course, along with the political elimination, we are concerned about his physical elimination and that of his wife.
We're talking to Ira Kurzban. Ira Kurzban, attorney for the Haitian government. We also have on the line with us from St. Kitts, Randall Robinson, who is the founder of TransAfrica and is now in St. Kitts, has written the book Quitting America, a close personal friend of the Aristides. Randall Robinson, welcome to this Pacifica Radio special. As you listen to Ira Kurzban, when was the last time you spoke with the Aristides, and what do you understand has happened to them at this point?
I spoke with President Aristide on Friday, Friday evening, and I spoke with Mildred Aristide on Saturday morning, at which time she gave me the numbers at which she could be reached that evening. I, on the previous occasions, had spoken to them in the palace, but she gave me the evening numbers because they were going to Tabar, their home that is some distance from the palace. I had been talking to them, my wife Hazel and I had been talking to them on the telephone from St. Kitts at least 10 times a day over the last 2 to 3 weeks. And yesterday evening, I called their home, and the voice I hadn't heard before answered the phone, a woman's voice, and I asked for the president and was told that he was busy. I'd never gotten a response like that before, and then I asked to speak to Mildred Aristide, and the voice said that she was busy too. And I said, well, when would they be getting back to me? This is important. And they said that they didn't know, and hung up. I had called to tell them about a call that had concerned us. We had gotten a call from Tavis Smiley, who had gotten a call from Ron Dellums, the former congressman who worked for the Haitian government. And Ron Dellums had been called by Secretary of State Colin Powell, who wanted him to give President Aristide a message. And the Secretary of State told him what Ron told both to Tavis and to my wife in a later discussion, and that was that Guy Philippe was coming to kill Aristide yesterday morning, the morning of his birthday, and to take over the palace and Haiti. And Secretary Powell wanted to make it clear to President Aristide that he would receive no defense, no assistance from the United States, and was very clear about that, that America wouldn't lift a finger to protect him from death. And so that information, of course, alarmed us greatly, and I thought the best thing to do was to call news media to see if we could spread the story to stay the hand, and of course cause the United States to be embarrassed about its behavior. And I called and spoke to Peter Jennings at ABC News, and then Randall Pinkston at CBS, and someone at CNN, and George Guetta at Associated Press. But later, Randall Pinkston called me back and told me that they couldn't authenticate the discussion that I knew to be the case because it had been sourced in two places and nothing happened. And so, of course, the next morning, which was this morning, we discovered what had happened, and now understand that they were abducted by American and French forces, or American forces, rather, at about 2 in the morning, and put onto a plane and packed off to places we don't know. We have no idea whether they are alive or not, or where they have gone. It was expected that they would go to South Africa. The South African Foreign Minister Zuma called me from India mid-afternoon and told me they had not arrived in South Africa. South Africa had not been contacted or approached, and South Africa had no idea where they were. And so, as of now, we have no idea where they are. We've been told that they may have been separated. My heart goes out to Mildred's parents in Florida, who has charge of their two small children, and Aristide's mother in Florida. This is a terrible time, but it is clear to me, because I had talked to Mildred about this very point, that under no circumstances would they leave Haiti voluntarily. Under no circumstances was the president going to step down from the post to which he was democratically elected. And so this was a coup affected by the United States of America against a democratically elected president to hand over charge of the country to thugs and killers that we armed and directed to be our stalking horse. This is a terrible day for democracy and freedom in the world. It's an awful day for the United States. Of course, worst of all, it is the worst day in memory for Haiti, having lost a leader who is broadly revered by the Haitian public at the hands of thugs that were emboldened, armed, directed, and encouraged by the United States of America.
Randall Robinson on the line with us from St. Kitts, a close personal friend of President Aristide and the First Lady, Mildred Aristide. Again, at this point, you have not heard from the Aristides in, what, more than 24 hours, 36 hours?
Since Saturday morning. And we had made an appointment to speak that evening by telephone. And, of course, I made the call from here. And we became worried when we got the answers at the house that we got. We knew something was had gone terribly wrong.
We want to play for a moment, for just one moment, an excerpt of an interview that I did with Mildred Aristide on Friday afternoon. This was when she first got on the telephone. The First Lady of Haiti was speaking from the National Palace.
Wait, Amy, it's Mildred Aristide.
Hi, thank you very much for calling. Well, why don't we just speak right away, and that is, are you afraid for your life and for your husband's life?
Okay, the situation is quite critical. You know, the thugs and the FRAP and the military, who are heavily armed in the north, are sending messages repeatedly on the airways in Haiti that they stand ready at any moment to storm Port-au-Prince. And here in Port-au-Prince, the population has erected, I'm looking out the window, lots of barricades along the streets to prevent an attack. Security is at a heightened situation. But the president's resolve is very strong, as he indicated yesterday and through to this morning, that what is important in this moment for Haiti in terms of the future of Haiti is to establish the stability and the political stability that Haiti has never had, and for there to be a continuity in governance from one president to the next.
We are just reading a report that says the Bush administration believes the best way to avoid an armed rebel takeover in Haiti is for Aristide to resign and transfer power to his constitutional successor. This according to an unnamed senior U.S. official. Meanwhile, the Marine Corps indicates it's preparing a possible mission to waters off the coast of Haiti. Any such deployment would be aimed at deterring a potential refugee crisis and protect the 20,000 American citizens in Haiti. Secretary of State Colin Powell signaled that direction. Administration policy and remarks Thursday night, said the U.S. official who discussed the situation only on grounds of anonymity. So here we have for the first time the Bush administration saying that the best way to avoid an armed rebel takeover is for President Aristide to resign. Your comment?
I think that the position being taken by the United States and by other members in the international community that see that as an option is completely antithetical to democracy and to constitutional democracy, and it's a great tragedy, and this will be the achievement of a coup, one of many in Haiti's hard and very sad history. We've had 32 coups. This will be the achievement of a coup. This will be the ability of a relatively small group of convicted murderers, drug dealers. This will show their ability to the world that in the face of elections, in the face of a vote of poor black people who voted for a president and voted for a government, it will show their ability to override that supposed democratic authority and be able to seize power in a nation. And I think it is a truly sad day, not only for Haiti, but for the world.
And that was Mildred Aristide speaking to us on Friday afternoon. Again, both our guests on the telephone right now. Randall Robinson last had contact midday on Saturday, as Ira Kurzban did, the attorney for the Haitian government. No one has heard from them since. We also have on the line with us two Congress members from the Congressional Black Caucus, Congressmember Maxine Waters of Los Angeles and Charles Rangel of New York. This is a Pacifica Radio special, Haiti Under Siege. Congressmember.
And this is Dennis Bernstein with Amy Goodman, and I'm talking to you from the Bay Area with Amy Goodman in New York City. Sorry
Hello?
To interrupt, Amy.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello, this is Charles Rangel.
Yes, Congressman Rangel. First of all,
yes,
your
I can hear you, Max.
Comments.
We're going to.
Congressman Rangel, are you there?
Dennis, he can't hear you.
Let me ask this question to Congressmember Rangel, and we'll fix the sound. Congressmember Rangel, you've just heard a summary of what Randall Robinson said, that he got a call from Tavis Smiley saying that he had spoke with Ron Dellums, who works for the Haitian government, who'd been called by Colin Powell to say that if Aristide didn't get out, he would be killed. Your response?
And importantly, that the U.S. wouldn't lift a finger to help him.
Oh, we're trying to hear you, Congressmember Rangel.
Well, I'm doing the best I can here.
We hear you fine.
Okay. I spoke with Colin Powell yesterday because Senator Harkin from Iowa was trying to get a plane for the Black Caucus members to go down because we were afraid that Aristide would be killed if we did nothing. But Colin Powell made it abundantly clear to me that that Aristide had to consider alternatives to just staying there. And I knew when I hung up and I told it to reporters that we were just as guilty of the coup as the opposition, as the rebels, as the military that fled into the Dominican Republic, and as the thugs and criminals that were moving in on the Capitol. I have never really seen the hatred and the arrogance that has been displayed when this president's name comes up. And I couldn't for the life of me understand who they thought they could deal with all of the turmoil that exists if something happened to Aristide. And I still don't understand the resignation part of this story. I could not get through to the president all day yesterday, the lines that I had, no one answered, and this home line remained busy.
Randall Robinson, your response.
Well, Charlie, Congresswoman Barbara Lee called me 2 days ago, and she asked, what are we to ask for if Aristide and Mildred want to leave, and smoothly, should we ask the State Department to facilitate that? And I told her I couldn't answer that question. I would have to put it to the Aristides. I knew what the answer was, but I was obliged to do that, and I did, and they were unequivocal. No, absolutely not. And so nothing is clearer to me than that they would never have voluntarily stepped down or left Port-au-Prince. He believed deeply that it was his responsibility to carry the country in the early period of its democracy from election to election. That was his mission. That was his commitment. And so I am clear in my own mind that the U.S. carried out this coup, forcibly took him from the mansion, and bundled him up and carried them off in the middle of the night to some unknown location.
Well, I spoke with President Aristide and Mrs. Aristide last week, and I certainly had the same impression that you did, that he felt it was his constitutional responsibility to finish out his term. And I even went as far as to talk about his safety, but he was very strong-willed about it. You know, and we reversed ourselves right in the middle of the negotiation. The President Aristide said, and I raised this question to Colin Powell, that when the CARICOM, when the Caribbean community, international community presented these accords, Aristide told me that the American ambassador said a half a dozen times that a negative response from the opposition will not be tolerated, that they were taking this to the opposition, and obviously it would mean to me that we would show power if they turned it down. And then before you know it, they were saying not only that Aristide should consider the alternative of what's good for Haiti, but on Thursday, a senior Republican was on, well, you saw the show, Randall, we talked about it.
It was Foley.
It was Mark Foley, who actually said after a briefing that that Aristide has to consider whether he's going to leave by a Learjet or in a body bag.
Did Foley say that?
On the air.
An elected member of Congress said that twice on the air.
I didn't know he had said that. It was clear to me that
this was a part of some type of briefing that they had.
Well, let me just say that I spoke with Aristide every day for the last 2 weeks. And I know that he did an address to the Haitians just day before yesterday, where he said he would not leave, he would not resign, that he would die first. He said it over and over again. I'm convinced that he did not resign.
Where was Mrs. Aristide?
Well, I guess she's with him. We can't get any answers.
We don't know. Because there are rumors that they have been separated. I mean, we have no idea.
Where are you hearing those rumors from?
Oh, they're running wild through the press and in Haiti and other places. I mean, we've heard at least 10 countries of destination, but the one I was reasonably confident about was South Africa because of the Aristide's close relationship with President Mbeki.
We're talking to Randall Robinson in St. Kitts. We're talking to Congress members Rangel and Maxine Waters. I'm Amy Goodman here with Dennis Bernstein, bring you a Pacifica radio special, Haiti Under Siege. And we're going to try to bring Dennis into this conversation and see if the phone guests can hear him. Dennis?
Okay, thank you, Amy. I hope the guests can hear me.
Yes,
it's clear to me that we can find out Monday exactly what's going on.
We're going to have to.
It sounds like they're not able to hear Dennis right now. So I will just ask.
I got a call from Janice O'Connell of Senator Dodd's office just before we went on the air here to say that the State Department has informed Senator Dodd that the president is being taken to the Central African Republic.
The Central African Republic, why there?
I don't know. The point is that the South Africans were willing to welcome him, but the foreign minister said that the United States cannot make a request for asylum on behalf of an asylum seeker. The asylum seeker has to make it. And since Aristide has not been allowed to speak to anyone, no one knows whether that is true or not about the Central African Republic. We just don't know anything. One thing I wanted to add, we didn't. And ask Congressman Rangel and Congresswoman Waters to chip in on this, is that this thing didn't just happen. This was planned a long time ago. And all of this I hear on the air that makes my blood just curdle is how President Aristide failed to stabilize Haiti and develop it economically. The United States... since his return, did everything imaginable to cripple any capacity he might have had to succeed. It denied, it blocked the loan for hundreds of millions of dollars voted by the Inter-American Development Bank for safe drinking water, for literacy, for health care. It cut out all bilateral assistance. It gave millions of dollars to an opposition that didn't exist, so that you have an Andy Arpaid, a Lebanese-American who is not even a Haitian citizen, demanding the resignation of an elected president when Mr. Arpaid has never been elected to anything, and the Americans supporting that and supporting the killers and opposing the Democratic president, it makes you fear your country. This is an America we have never seen before.
Right, and you know it is so very, very frustrating to see the so-called mainstream press keep spouting over and over again all of the lies, all of the disinformation. Everything that you say is absolutely true. Not only that, you never heard our own government denounce the so-called opposition who refuse to come to the table, who refused to do what Aristide did, and that was, you know, agree to this CARICOM proposal that would set up a kind of a council of wise people who would then select two people for him to choose from to become prime minister. He gave all of that. But you've never heard them say that the other side absolutely refused. They were never denounced. They were never taken to task. In addition to that, they never denounced Guy Philippe and Chamblain and the killers who were up in Ghana Eve, who had been in exile, who were organized by something or somebody to come back with weapons. Those weapons that we have keep hearing about, M16 American-made weapons, we keep hearing this over and over again. And we never heard a denouncement. As a matter of fact, I was stunned to see an interview with Guy Philippe on one of the major television stations. This was a guy who tried a coup d'etat against the president in 2002 and was living over in the Dominican Republic, and Aristide had been generous enough to see him out after he tried to initiate a coup d'etat against him, and he was supposed to be reporting to the Dominican government and not meddling in the affairs of Haiti. But here he was back, and nobody, Colin Powell, nobody said that these thugs and killers that had the guns up in Ghana Eve need to be disarmed. We could have avoided, what appears to be happening now if we simply had gone in and strengthened the Haitian police force.
I asked Colin Powell that if Aristide did leave, what assurances did he have that he could talk with anybody, since the rebels were so proud of the fact that they could move in and kill Aristide anytime they wanted?
Yes.
And so who would he talk with? He said the Supreme Court, the head of the Supreme Court. I said, well, if you find someone that makes some sense to you, and you and the opposition is not cooperating, and you have the international community to set down the courts, why the hell don't you just go in there and talk with the Supreme Court guy while the president is there? You know? And he said the
Constitution didn't allow it. And how were they in contact with the thugs who were threatening to kill? Did they have an open line to Colin Powell?
Well, that's what I'm saying. How in the devil would you tell the man to leave unless you were talking to these people?
Well, here's what
is the significance of this resignation business? Why would someone fleeing for his life go through the formality of resigning? What is
I have
about?
A theory about that, Charlie, and here's my theory. They thought they could scare him out of office. They thought if they let Guy Philippe and them keep threatening, talking about they were on their way and they had arms and weapons, that he was going to run. When he cast himself in concrete and said, I am not going anywhere, they were at an impasse. And Guy Philippe and them were not going to come into Port-au-Prince with all of those people ready for them. You had all what they call the OPs and the Chimeres and Lavalas, who had decided that they were going to defend Port-au-Prince and they were going to defend the palace, and they set up barricades. And so I believe that Guy Philippe and them couldn't come in. And when Aristide decided not to go, and Philippe and them couldn't get past the OPs and the Chimeres and Lavalas, then the United States had to finish the job, and they went in with the Marines to his house, and he took him out.
What supports that theory, Maxine, is that the Aristide's home at Tabar is well beyond the airport. It must be perhaps 15 or so miles from downtown Port-au-Prince.
Mm-hmm.
So, and at first, looking at television, we thought the thugs were at the gates from what you could see on television. And
no,
then Aristide called us from home. They were going back and forth between the palace and home in a car. And so
they couldn't
point is the thugs have not penetrated the perimeter of the city, and there's no question that these thugs did not go in and take the president and his wife away. The Americans did that.
American Marines did it. And
I'm going to interrupt here for a minute and play you a report or speculation that we got just a little while ago. Democracy Now! Producer Jeremy Scahill spoke with Kevin Pena on the phone. For people who are just listening right now, we are bringing you a Pacifica Radio special, Haiti Under Siege. The guests we are speaking to are Randall Robinson, founder of TransAfrica. He's in St. Kitts, and Congressmembers Charles Rangel and Maxine Waters. We're going to turn now to Kevin Pena on the ground in Port-au-Prince, an independent reporter.
Here's what I've just learned from two independent sources. I received a call from the personal guard of the presidential palace, who said that the U.S. Ambassador, James B. Foley, arrived at the presidential palace, the personal residence of the president in the palace, at 4 a.m. in the morning. This particular guard, who was part of the personal contingent guarding President Jean-Bertrand Aristide, reported that the president was escorted from the palace handcuffed at 5:30 in the morning. A second source, which I received from an ABC cameraman who refuses to give his name because he's very, very frightened, said that they had an interview with Jean-Bertrand Aristide at 5 a.m. in the morning, and that he confirmed this, that President Aristide left the presidential palace handcuffed this morning at 5:30 in the morning.
Kevin, any indication of where they took Jean-Bertrand Aristide?
There is no indication at this moment. His spokesman in the United States, Ira Kurzban, the legal counsel of the Haitian government, has accused the U.S. government of kidnapping President Jean-Bertrand Aristide. At this moment, we have no idea where he is.
And that was Kevin Pena on the line from Port-au-Prince. I'd like to get the response of the Congress members, Rangel and Waters, and also ask, what power do you have as Congress members now to get a response from the U.S. government? And let's understand, who is the security in charge of Aristide? Are they American?
No, let me say this. We can get and demand, and we will get their responses. It's just that we have been going through a series of lies by them. Now, this morning I got a call at 7 o'clock from Stephanopoulos on Channel 7 asking me to come down because they had a person at the palace with a scheduled interview this morning, and they said that President Aristide wasn't there. Yesterday, Colin Powell, when I was expressing concern about Aristide's life, said that he had hired professionals outside of Haiti as his personal bodyguards, and the security was pretty good. But I tell you this, Maxine, this may be bad for Haiti, but I think the president has really overstepped his bounds on this one.
Well, I want to tell you, it's something funny going on. It stinks to holy hell. And if they have kidnapped President Aristide, the United States Congress has a constitutional responsibility to deal with that. There must be an investigation. There must be hearings on this.
Well, we
have to answer some questions.
We can take to the floor every day because we got Dodd, we got Senator Harkin, we got who was on the program with me this morning is Senator DeWine. And so this isn't just a Black Caucus thing. There are even people who dislike Aristide who respected the rule of law as
someone that's
duly
elected. Well, that includes Jan Schakowsky and Congressman Delahunt. I mean, these people are adamantly opposed to what the United States appear to be doing, being involved in the ouster of a democratically elected president. And what it appears now, even though we don't have all the information, but we're getting more and more information, it looks as if he's been kidnapped. if he's been taken by force against his will. And it sounds true to us because he said, and I said, I talked to him every day for the past 2 weeks.
He would have called you, Maxine, or he would have called me, because we all, I don't know about all, but I know that President Aristide have been hearing from members of the Congressional Black Caucus, which includes, of course, you, Max, but also Cummings, and he spoke with Harkin, and he was talking with me. If he was going to leave, I think that he is so polite and courteous that he would have thanked us and called somebody and said he's leaving.
He certainly would have. He would have.
On the question of the security firms, Ira Kurzban can add to this, but there were two American companies that provided security. One of them quit last week. And when they tried to retain another firm, they sent the money to the firm. The firm kept the money and never materialized.
Oh, my God.
Well, one thing is certain, that the United States government made it clear that they were on the sides of the rebels. I mean, they said that not in body language, but in English.
Well, since January 1, when I was in Haiti for the bicentennial, and the State Department arranged for me to meet with Andy Arpaide and the opposition, it was clear that they felt they had the United States on their side, and they called Mr. Noriega's name like he lived next door to him. And so it was very clear to me that they were well connected, that they were working with them, and that they fully expected the United States to be on their side no matter what happens. And it certainly turns out that way. I mean, when they can say no and thumb their nose and the United States go to hell, you can get Aristide to sign whatever you want him to sign, and the United States bring them the proposal, and they say no like that, and the United States does nothing to disarm the thugs and the killers from the old military that's in the man's country, it's clear to me that the United States has always been on their side. As a matter of fact, I got a call from a journalist who told me that there was a meeting with Noriega and someone in the Canadian government a year ago where they were planning this ouster of Aristide. I'm going to be following up on that with this journalist, but there seems that there's some information on the public record, because one of the persons who was in the secret meeting leaked some of the information that got into the press and got fired, is in some other role now, but this is a story that's worth following up on.
Who was that reporter? Is that going to hit the airwaves tomorrow so that we would know?
I will have her name tomorrow.
No, I'm talking about what we just heard, that he was let out in handcuffs.
Are you talking about Kevin Pena?
We're talking about Kevin Pena, and he is going to be joining us on the line in a moment in Port-au-Prince.
That's got to be some type. I mean, that's got to get to the press, you know, tomorrow morning, won't it?
It's
in the public air. She's putting it on the air right now.
I know.
One of the things we should know,
Randall Robinson,
about Andy Arpaide is that he's a wealthy businessman who runs sweatshops in Haiti. And what bothered him greatly about President Aristide was his attempt to raise the minimum wage from its current mark of $1.60 a day.
And to make him pay his taxes.
Demanding that the Haitian wealthy begin to pay taxes that they had so long avoided. And, of course, they, because Aristide was the voice of Haiti's poor, they could not accept that, and they had the full support of the United States in anything that they were prepared to do.
Well, it doesn't surprise
Congressmember Rangel.
Talking about the business interests of the working class, that this administration would be on the side.
We are talking to Congress members Rangel and Waters. We're talking to, as well, Randall Robinson, who's speaking to us from St. Kitts. And we also have Congress member Barbara Lee on the line with us from the Bay Area. As you listen to this conversation and all that we have heard in this hour, something that's issues that certainly have not been raised in the mainstream media, the fact that, as Randall Robinson was just saying, that all of the people on the line who've had close communication with the Aristides have not been able to hear from him or Mildred Aristide, the First Lady of Haiti, now in more than a day, when Randall Robinson had been talking to them as often as 10 times a day. The fact that no one has been able to communicate with them if they were taken out of the country where they have been taken. Your response, Barbara Lay, Congressmember Lay.
You know, I am convinced that... the facts that we just heard from the reporter, Dana Porter-Prince, are probably accurate, that they were kidnapped. And it's a sad day for America. Of course, it's a sad day for Haiti. But, you know, I know for a fact, like Maxine and Charlie and Randall, we know that the Aristides were not leaving, period. They indicated that their children were in Florida and they were going to stay in Haiti to the end, no matter what. We have called for hearings. Of course, you know, it's like too little too late, but I know on Wednesday they're going to be hearings, and we're going to have to really figure out where we're going with this, because I believe, like many believe, that this was the culmination of a plan by the Bush administration, and this just didn't happen in the last couple of weeks. And American people need to understand their tax dollars are going for overthrowing governments, actually supporting violent overthrows of governments. And I think that that's something we cannot accept.
We're going to join now Kevin Pena on the line from Haiti, speaking with Dennis Bernstein, and we'll bring them up in mid-conversation.
All right. Kevin, are you there?
Dennis, are you there?
I think we've... Yeah, I am here, Amy, but I think we did have Barbara Lee and Kevin Pena, but I think we just lost them in whatever technical transformation just took place.
We're going to go back to this discussion, Dennis, and we're going to get you on the phone so that you can join in this discussion. We are talking to Congress members Barbara Lee, Maxine Waters, and Charles Rangel, as well as Randall Robinson, very close friend of the Aristides. And we have been speaking with Ira Kurzban, the attorney for the Haitian government. I was asking both Congress members before we brought on Barbara Lee what you can do as a Congress member. Can you tell us?
Well, what we can do, first of all, I think today, immediately, is try to get our government to tell us what they did and what their involvement was in this. You know, this is a very serious situation, I think, in terms of U.S. foreign policy, not only in the Caribbean and Latin America, but throughout the world. And we need answers from them right away. We're calling, all of us are calling Secretary of State Colin Powell, the White House. They are stonewalling the questions I know that we're raising with them. As recent as just an hour ago, they indicated that they couldn't discuss his whereabouts, that this, you know, was something that just couldn't be discussed at this point. And I think we have to just demand, first of all, what they did. And did they, in fact, kidnap President Aristide and hold our government accountable? We've got to do that, like, now.
I don't know what we do now, but I do have some numbers for Cummings. I'll Chairman, to alert him that we got to hit the ground running tomorrow morning, you know, with press releases and demands that the administration come forward. Because just Thursday, they lied through their teeth. And even last night, Colin Powell was saying that we shouldn't be concerned. He said the same thing to Senator Harkin, not to worry. So it's clear that they knew what was going on, especially.
To think that an American Secretary of State,
Randall Robinson,
would say to a messenger to President Aristide that they're coming to kill you tomorrow and we're not going to lift a finger is a chilling thing, when all that would have been required to the thugs that they directed was a phone call.
to stay their hand. And when they couldn't get into town, as Maxine described, then apparently the American forces took matters into their own hands. I mean, this has frightening implications for Americans domestically and in our behaviors abroad.
Dennis Bernstein, you have a question. Dennis, are you there? Okay, we'll go. We also have in the studio with us Margaret Dominique, who is with the WBAI program, The Struggle Continues. A question from you, Margaret.
Yes, I have a question. What else can we do besides the members of Congress can try to pressure the government to give some answers? But this is a very serious international incident. What international law gives the U.S. the right to go in into another sovereign nation and force its president to resign, to forcibly take the president away while they intend to plan to put their own person in?
Well, I don't think there's any question that it is a flagrant violation of international law. That's not a close call at all.
Not at all. Kofi Annan should be all over this, just as we should be all over it. Asking for an investigation in the matter.
I'll handle that because I was with Kofi this evening and we were supposed to talk anyway.
And there was supposed to be a meeting with Kofi Annan by members of the caucus on Monday.
Yeah, we're supposed to be there tomorrow afternoon. And let me just say, I think that this is part of the Bush administration's regime change policy. That's central in his foreign policy. And I suspect that this has been on the table, and this is part of the plan, and this is, you know, the culmination of their plan. And
totally illegal. As a matter of fact, we know.
Congressmember Maxine Waters.
Mr. Noriega was, in fact, carrying out the policy to get rid of Aristide in Haiti, Mr. Chavez over in Venezuela, and we think they're going after Castro next. These guys have decided that they're going to clean out these leaders in the Western Hemisphere who don't cry uncle.
We're gonna have to.
And you know their foreign policy doctrine of preemption. Remember, this manifests itself in many ways depending on which country they're ready to move on.
That's right.
And we have to be clear on that as this administration continues its illegal and immoral activities in the world.
We have Michael Ratner on the line with us, the president for Center for Constitutional Rights. The one issue we haven't addressed in the last minute we have, and then we'll be handing the program over to Dennis Bernstein of KPFA to continue for the next hour and alert stations that they can continue to take the program. Michael, the issue of refugees.
Well, this government is again being outrageous with regard to refugees. The law is clear. You can't send refugees back to a place of persecution. What our government does is doing now is building a wall of ships and Marines to send people back to Haiti, where they may very well, in fact, as Ira Kurzban described, some have already been killed, where people are facing death. It's incredible that Bush 2 is doing what Bush 1 did, sending people back to their deaths. Not only did they, as has been clear, participate, involve themselves in the coup, now they're violating international law again that prohibits sending people back to their deaths. It's an outrage, and we've got to protest it.
Margaret Dominique.
Yes. Michael, it's clear that this was planned by the U.S. because they've had set up bed in Guantanamo to get ready to send those refugees. They're fully intended of preventing people from leaving, fleeing, while they're the one who gave the weapons to the gangs to kill people. I understand friends of the president, all the members of the government are being seeked out and to be killed. There's a great danger to them.
No, there is. Right now, right in Port-au-Prince, right now as we speak, people are being killed. They're going to want to flee. Let me just say, they did set up Guantanamo. We've heard about that for a number of weeks now for 50,000 beds. But in some sense, that would be almost lucky compared to what they're doing. This morning, I saw pictures of people being returned to Haiti. not even taken to Guantanamo. That's what's amazing to me. They're taking people back to the hands of the people who are going to kill them. It's got to stop.
Well, we want to thank everyone for being with us for this hour. The program does continue for the next, but for those who need to break away, we want to thank you for being with us. Democracy Now! And KPFA and Flashpoints and Haiti the Struggle Continues of WBAI together in this Pacifica collaboration, Haiti Under Siege. A special thanks to our producers, Jeremy Scahill, Sharif Abdelkadous, Mike Burke, Leah Azzarello. We're streaming at democracynow.org. Also to Elizabeth Press, our guests, Randall Robinson, and Congress members, Maxine Waters, Charles Rangel, Barbara Lee. Also on the line with us has been Randall Robinson, speaking to us from St. Kitts, close friend of the Aristides who haven't been heard from in more than a day. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Bernstein. Thanks for joining us, and for stations who are staying with us, we'll continue. Quelle est son nationalité? Donne lui dit qu'on vit dans tout pays, c'est respiration seulement différent. Bah ouais, les gens vont faire pour les mines pas faire avancer, c'est vrai pour les mousses, ça qui vivent. Et pour ils pas faire garder derrière, marcher, 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 marcher. Et pourquoi marcher? Pour s'arrêter.